Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's November 2020, and you're listening to episode 211, which is a discussion about self-care. On this episode, I'm joined by Anne Kennedy, who has an MDiv and is the author of Nailed It, 365 Readings for Angry and Worn Out People, and the second edition of this book was just released. Anne blogs about current events and theological trends at Preventing Grace on Patheos.com. She has written a feature article in the Volume 43, Number 2 print issue of the Christian Research Journal, and her article is called There is No Health in Us, Wellness and Self-Care in the Age of COVID-19. You can read her article when you subscribe to our magazine at our website, equip.org. Anne, it's good to have you on.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, as I mentioned, Anne has a feature article in our current print edition of the Christian Research Journal. And this topic is, I think, very interesting for the times that we're in, because right now, of course, it's November 2020, as I mentioned, and we are in the midst of kind of a second round of spikes in COVID. And so people are feeling overwhelmed and isolated. And so this topic of self-care is very big. And even before COVID, I would say in the media or just lifestyle magazines, there's just a lot, especially for women in particular, about self-care and, making sure you take care of you. So what is self-care as, people are kind of defining it right now?
It basically has come to be not just the stuff that you do to take care of yourself in the ordinary way of being alive, eating or taking your medicine or taking a walk. It's much more expansive than that, to include the sort of mental health stuff that you would do to keep yourself going, which would include anything from seeing a therapist to getting a pedicure or a manicure or buying yourself something fancy at the store. It's not just what you do to take care of yourself. It's how you treat yourself as well, and what you do to feel okay as a person. And so I found it's a very blurry category, as opposed to the sort of narrowly defined word that I think people were used to in the, when it first came into being as a medical term.
It seems to me that self-care currently can mean anything from coping with things that are overwhelming to you in your life, or just like you were saying, like a manicure or mani-pedi or, a shopping spree or something like that, that where you feel like you're loving yourself and taking care of yourself in that way. And so that's kind of, like you said, it's fluid and kind of what contemporary people think of in terms of culturally. But what did the term self-care mean more historically?
So it comes from the medical community. If you're in the hospital and they have that little board up there, they'll put stuff on it that you have to meet certain goals so that when you get home, you're able to take care of yourself, that you're able to take your own medicine. I in my article, I likened it to my daughter broke her elbow and had to have surgical pins put in, and they really wanted her to be able to do her own wound care as much as she could, which was sort of a very good example of self-care. She needed extra care, but she was able to provide a lot of it for herself with supervision. So it comes from the medical community, and I think in that sense it's very useful because, in medicine, people are caring for each other. The category of caring for yourself in certain capacities is a useful sort of pithy term for that. But in 2016, it jumped over into the mainstream as a way of coping with life. I feel like it's a lifetime ago that I thought about this. Okay, it was only back in March maybe, but I've lived two lives since then. It used to be sort of more the Black community used it as a way of thinking about, in particular, women, how they were coping with life. And then it crossed over into the mainstream and became a term that everybody uses all the time to mean whatever it is that they are doing at the moment to make themselves feel okay.
Now, I'm wondering if you can help us understand the difference, because it seems to me that terms are used interchangeably between wellness and self-care. Now, currently, I think of wellness in terms of, like, culturally in 2020 as kind of new age medicine therapies that you do to, you know, align your soul or spirit or something like that, or going to one of those wellness wholeness centers where you, you know, do yoga every day and do various different, you know, new age practices and stuff like that. Or maybe some of those people involved in that kind of worldview have brought it into and called it wellness. But is there a difference between wellness and self-care in terms of, you know, caring for your mental health or how you feel about yourself?
I think as I did all my reading, it seemed like self-care was maybe a subset of wellness. Wellness seems to be this all-encompassing. Yeah, I thought of it as New Age at first too, but the World Health Organization has whole reams of stuff about wellness. There's like a National Wellness Institute. When you look at the things that they list as part of falling under the category of wellness, it includes everything: emotional, occupational, physical, social, intellectual, spiritual. It's basically the whole person. And that, again, I do think is sort of a nebulous, fluid term. People do use it. I was online a while ago, and there are now what people are selling wellness houses. Like, you can buy a house that's been built with categories of wellness in mind for millions of dollars. You can buy into this idea of wellness. A lot of college sites have wellness sections on their websites, and then self-care will fall under that bigger category. And so it does, it's not just physical. It's not just your physical well-being. It's your emotional well-being, your spiritual well-being. It has a religious feeling about it in many of the places where I read about wellness. You have a duty. If you read the World Health Organization, you have a duty to yourself to be well in an all-encompassing sense. You should do whatever it is that you can to be well, which I thought was fascinating. It's not just, you know, a cream to make your face feel softer. It's a spiritual thing that you're buying into. Your own care, your own health is your highest good. You're sort of participating in something bigger and broader and more encompassing when you do wellness rather than just sort of eating healthy. Or I can't even remember how we thought about health before self-care and wellness came into being. I mean, I don't even know if I thought about it when I was younger. I just tried to get through the day. It's a new category, a new way of posturing yourself towards the world. It's all encompassing. It answers all the questions that you need to have answered in life.
Well, it's interesting that you say that there's a spiritual element to it, because on Instagram, for anyone who's on Instagram, there's a lot of women on there, and there's actually a hashtag that's called Self-Care Sunday, and you post on Sundays the different, you know, regimens that you're doing, or the ways in which on a Sunday, obviously, instead of going to church, you're caring for yourself. And so what are some of the underlying cultural assumptions behind wellness and self-care? Because there must be, I mean, this hashtag has, you know, over 1 million posts of people posting how they're caring for themselves on a Sunday.
I feel like I keep running into these sort of assumptions, and I feel a little dissonance within my own Christian soul. And then it takes a while for me to tease out why I'm having a sort of a cultural clash, because I think there are probably many assumptions at the heart of it. But one of the biggest ones is that is a shifted sense, I think I already said it, of duty. You and yourself are the most important thing in the world, and you have to be happy. So I think the expectation that the human person will be happy in temporal terms and will feel fulfilled and satisfied is one of the biggest and deepest assumptions at the base of wellness or self-care. along with the sense that you in yourself, knowing yourself is the primary value. You must know who you are and nurture who you are and think through who you are and know yourself. If you don't know yourself, you're not really a true participant in this worldview, I think. And so the shifted sense of where the ground of your own identity is, which is that it's you're grounded in yourself and your own feelings. So you need to maintain a certain level of feeling good. That occupies just an immense amount of time and emotional energy. It's where you're gonna really spend the bulk of your intellectual and emotional time. I think that's a cultural clash for me because I grew up in a culture where the community was the baseline. People's relationships to each other in their family, very close-knit family groups, and in the village where I lived, that was your primary identity. It wasn't your own individual identity was not the ground of your being. How you were related to other people was how you would be in the world and know and find out about the world. So America is, you know, the West has always been sort of very individual in its outlook on life, but it's gone to epic levels, I would say. So that, you know, like I used to, even 10 years ago, you'd hear people thinking through their identity as a mother or their identity as in relationships to other people and trying to sort that through. I think a lot of that has been stripped away in the last couple of years. And it's really just about who you are at the very deepest point of, and you need to find that and then take care of it, soothe it, calm it, feed it. For me, it sounds a little bit like your own ego is the little tin pot god that you've got to constantly be making sacrifices to, but that's a negative spin on a lot that I've read about this. But even how I've come to talk as well, it's kind of a very easy way to talk about taking care of yourself, self-care, is just now the pond that we're swimming in, you know, so we don't even know that we're in a pond.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Ann Kennedy. She has written a feature article in the print issue of Volume 43, Number 2 of the Christian Research Journal, and her article is called "There Is No Health in Us: Wellness and Self-Care in the Age of COVID-19. You can read her article when you subscribe to our magazine for $33.50 at our website, equip.org. Well, we are really thankful for you as our listeners. It's Thanksgiving week 2020, and I just want to say thank you so much for sharing our podcast with your friends and for listening to it faithfully and for sharing it on social media as well. We're really grateful for that. We'd like to ask you, though, if you have some time over the holiday, if you haven't already, give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, because it's the way that more people can find this content, and you can easily just in seconds just give us a star rating. But if you have a minute to think about what you appreciate about this podcast, we'd really like it if you give us a short written review. In addition, if you don't have at this time in your budget some funds for a subscription, we'd really be grateful if you could partner with us by giving us a tip. Something small, $3, $5, $10. You can do that at our website, equip.org. Just go to that front page, and if you select magazine at the drop-down menu, you'll see Postmodern Realities Podcast. And then if you hit that at any landing page, there's a link to tip us if you are able. And just again, we just want to thank you for all the ways in which you support this content by being a subscriber, by being a listener, and by telling a friend about the podcast. Happy Thanksgiving. We were just kind of, you were unpacking for us just like underlying cultural assumptions between wellness and self-care and just the idea of self-care in the West in particular. And you mentioned growing up in a village. So for some of our listeners who haven't listened to previous podcasts, grew up as a child of missionaries in Africa. And then, you know, we could probably go down a tangent for this, but it seems like other cultures in the East, like in Asian cultures, this kind of, I mean, some of them are probably adopting more Western kind of ideals, but it's even in atheist Asian cultures, it's very much about not the individual. It's about not shaming the whole community. It's about doing what the community does. So it is very, maybe Western and American in terms of especially this billion-dollar industry of self-care and, you know, self-care meditation masks. I'm not really sure what a meditation mask is. I guess you put on a mask and you meditate, something like that. So why do we seem addicted to this whole world and word of self in so many different ways, especially in the West? Like, you know, we've talked before, as we've talked about various different women lecturers out there on the circuit, this idea of self-forgiveness. And, you know, we're talking about self-care, and we can just put self in front of so many other things. Why is that so important to think of other things in terms of yourself? Like, forgiveness to me, it's like we've taken that and figured out how do we need to forgive ourselves instead of thinking about, well, how does that work in relationships? So why is there so much emphasis now on the self in terms of how we relate to anything?
I've been asking myself this question over and over again, even just saying myself. And it kind of leapt to the surface for me recently with a group of students. And there was sort of a meditation time on scripture and then a group time of prayer. And then someone in the group said, okay, now we're going to enter a time of self-prayer. And I had never heard that before. And I almost fell off my seat because I knew we were all in the room. We were praying to God. And I think, you know, a few minutes ago, we would have said, we're going to have a time of silent prayer to God. But the sort of reflexive self-forgiveness, self-marriage, self-love, of course, now they've all fled out of my mind, but you can pretty much put self in front of anything now. So that's why I reacted so strongly to the self-prayer doesn't work, because we're not praying to ourselves. Whereas self-love, it reflects back on you. It's a self-reflective term. You forgive yourself, you love yourself, you are gentle with yourself, you can marry yourself. Any word that you can make it, you can turn it back in towards you. And I think that if somebody outside of the church heard the term self-prayer, they would assume that you meant that you were going to then pray to yourself. So I thought that was really funny. I think this self is a real, it's a deep shift. It's probably been coming for a long time, but a deep shift away from the Christian norm of being in a personal relationship with Jesus has sort of metastasized into the culture to be you are your own, you know, you can self-save at this point by enacting your own happiness. So you're the ground of all being, you're the measure of all things, and your happiness is a necessary moral good in the universe. So, of course, it would be very easy then to tack the word self onto everything that you're thinking about or doing. It's the obvious way of communicating about reality. And that's why I think it just happens. I run into it so often in conversation and online. It's just the way that we talk now, even as Christians. And I think it's really interesting in a sort of a very depressing kind of turn, because a lot of these words, forgiveness, marriage, prayer, and love, I would say are necessarily oriented towards someone else. You can't have them turned inward. If you do that, even with something like care, self-care, they lose their essential meaning and purpose, not only as a word, but as a concept, a broader concept. So, you know, when you say the God is love, for instance, you wouldn't say the God sort of encompasses a feeling of love. God is love because God is triune, and the Father perfectly and eternally loves the Son, who perfectly and eternally loves the Spirit, and they are an ever-ending outflow of love, one for the other. They are turned towards one another rather than in towards themselves. And so the word love when you are, or care, I would say. Care, I think, as a word is necessarily turned out. If you turn it back in towards the self, it loses something really essential in communication. That's a great tragedy. I think the fact that we're sort of letting go of these words and letting them be oriented towards the self means that even as Christians, we're going to have a hard time communicating basic Christian concepts that have, you know, been taken away and subverted, turned right round to the opposite of their true meaning. So it's a really interesting language issue that's pointing to a deep, deep cultural shift of what the primary element of the universe even is.
It is interesting because in terms of, you were talking about the Trinity, but in terms of what the Bible talks about meaning, the meaning of the word care, it's so different from the contemporary word self-care, which is, like you said, the opposite. You know, the New Testament talks about, we're supposed to give all of our worries over to God because he cares for you. And there's just no, it's always other-centered. You know, if you're caring for one another in the body, it's not caring for yourself. It's caring for other believers that are suffering and hurting, which is kind of interesting because in our modern concept, if there's suffering and hurt in our lives, we need to take care of ourselves. So, of course, I mentioned earlier that this is a billion-dollar business, especially I would think probably more women are into the idea of self-care in terms of the cultural ways in which it's expressed. So what are some of the things that, I mentioned the meditation mask, but what are other things that you can buy and how expensive are they? And are they really, you know, guaranteed to soothe you, to help you care for yourself?
Well, in knowing that we were going to talk today, I went and got on, I like in general to go over to Goop as a fun exercise because I think it's such an interesting, it's sort of the outlier. Most people in American culture are not going to go buy anything from Goop. It's Gwyneth Paltrow's wellness empire that she's building. And she's kind of at she's at the center of it. She's the sort of perfect model of a wellness person who's achieved wellness, I think. It's interesting because if you go to Goop, and then you contrast it with the Christian sort of websites or cultures. Christians like to talk about brokenness a lot, you know. Brokenness has replaced the idea of sin. Well, I would say if you go over to the Goop world, which is completely secular, there's no mention of brokenness. It's about balance. It's about self-fulfillment. It's about enacting your own sense. So, One article is somebody's talking about staying centered and putting well-being first. That's really what you want to do. So at Goop, she will sell you pots and pans, glowing skin bestseller kit, infrared sauna blanket, and then a lot of things that you would like, sex sort of things. She has... Some of them have been debunked and told, you know, medical people have said, don't do those. Those are not safe. So sex is a huge part of just the wellness world. You should be having really good, well sex, and self-care and sex kind of definitely go together. But a lot of the things on her website are very expensive. So for $410, you can get some sort of oils. I'm not even quite sure what they are. You can get a candle, which I don't even want to say what the name of it is, for $75. Shea butter on the Goop website costs you $55. You can buy an Instapot from Goop as well. And then there's clothes, and there's tons and tons of articles about different things you can cook or what you should read, Therabody stuff. A lot of the names are kind of beyond me. Yeah, Goop is the higher end, I would say, of wellness and self-care. But I think if you can market, you know, whatever it is that you have to sell, if you can market it in terms of wellness or self-care, you're going to be able to charge a little bit extra for it. And it's true. This, you know, women are the, I think, the primary spenders, and they're the target audience for all this stuff. And I think if you, you know, if you want to just, if you have a blanket that you want to sell, if you call it, if you've cast it in terms of self-care, or the weighted blanket here on the Goop site, is you can charge at least $100 more, I think, for it, because it turns it into a spiritual value rather than just something that you're buying because you want it. It's an interesting twist on sort of the deep cultural assumption of materialism too, as being the way that you enact your own happiness. That assumption has also isn't being questioned by the wellness movement. You know, you should be ethical in your choices, of course, of buying certain things, but it's totally fine to spend a lot of money on your own wellness. That's what you should do if you can.
That's interesting, because, you know, what's the end in that? Maybe you'd say, well, I'm not really materialistic, but if this, like you say, shea butter for more than $50 helps, you know, you prioritize your own well-being by using it, then it becomes more of a spiritual thing, I guess, for some people.
Yeah, I saw a tweet earlier today. I can't find it now, but somebody was saying on Twitter, if you just do self-care on Twitter, somebody had tweeted, you know, however much money you need to spend on your own self-care, you should spend that if you have it. Like, not questioning at all that maybe you might want to spend your money some other way. But like, if you have a lot of money, it is totally fine to spend that money on your own self-care. That was, you know, it was only in 140 characters, but I thought that was a fascinating tweet. I haven't seen that kind of bold statement ever, I think, on personal spending, about spending towards and about yourself, an unapologetic statement that's just what you should do. There's no, don't worry about it. That's not selfish or bad.
Right. Because that helps you, you know, achieve self-happiness or, you know, feel better. But it's kind of like this unlimited, I mean, it's like, when will you ever achieve that? That would be the biggest question in this whole self-care worldview. But what about self-care, like in a legitimate sense, in terms of COVID, where people are feeling much anxiety, and they're feeling isolation, and they're feeling loneliness. And even in the church, a lot of people, if they are unable to, you know, come back in person because of health reasons, or some churches haven't been meeting at all. I mean, you know, churches in California, they can't meet at all. They haven't, you know, legally, they can't meet at all. They haven't met since March. So how do, you know, how as Christians do we look at self-care during COVID? And has it really grown in terms of more awareness about self-care, just like in the cultural sense, because of COVID?
I think for Christians, it's fine to push back against the martyr complex. Sometimes it's been put too high, you know, that you should go and look for suffering, for instance, if you haven't had any of it yet. Although I don't really hear people saying that much anymore, but I think Christians should have a high view of suffering. So I think that self-care, especially as I've tried to help other people along through COVID, I'm okay with you thinking about your life in terms of with some self-care in it. If that's a word that helps you, I think you should use it. But you should include in your self-care, as you said, going to church or being an embedded member of a Christian community where, okay, if you can't go in person, you show up at Zoom prayer meetings. You reach out for help from your Christian community. You are vulnerable with those people, and you let other people in to your life so that they can care for you, because you cannot achieve perfect self-care. That's not a goal that you should waste a lot of your time on. So you should, in order to care for yourself, you should go to church and be vulnerable with people in a church. You should read the Bible, because God will feed you through the scriptures as you read them, as you listen to good preaching. And you should pray. I mean, Christians should think of prayer as akin to breathing. So one thing you can do for self-care is to breathe. You know, if you hold your breath, obviously you're not caring for yourself. That's insane. And your body doesn't even let you do it. And yet many Christians think that they can get along without prayer or Bible study or Christian community or communion. And so, yeah, if you are, and I think you can see in Christian people's lives, the cracks where they haven't spent time in the disciplines of the Christian life. That's the degree to which people are kind of coming unglued, I think. You need to care for your body. That's an essential basic part of being a human person. You have to bathe, you have to eat, you should take a walk, you should take your medicine. If you're really depressed, you should see a doctor and a counselor. And you should really spend time getting to know God, because ultimately God is the one who cares for you. So yeah, I'm willing to make an uneasy peace with the idea of self-care, even for Christians, as long as it is not a pure adoption of this self-reflective world value of the self as an unquestioned entity, and all of the baggage that comes with it into the that and all of that baggage should be left at the door of the church. If you're going to do self-care, you've got to think about it in really different terms.
I guess on the flip side, what would happen to people if they didn't take care of themselves? I mean, you know, it's often quoted that our bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit. And I do think that, you know, there's a baseline that people should, like you were saying, bathe and take a walk and, you know, eat in a healthy way. But, you know, is there something negative if you don't take care of yourself?
I guess that's part of the, you know, I have somebody's list up here. This person has like 15 things that you should do for self-care. And it includes things like journal, pick up a creative hobby, spend time in nature, exercise, but also like write yourself a love letter. Okay, well, that's a real jumble. You know, you probably should have a hobby, you know. If you have the leisure for a hobby and you're working too much and you're exhausted, yes, you should do something else for a bit and you should learn how to rest. So, God, you know, Sunday, go to church. That's Christian Sabbath is a time for you to rest because you need to rest. If you don't ever rest, that's catastrophic for you and it's catastrophic for everybody else in your whole life who then have to pick up the pieces of who you are. So, yes, you should... you should care for yourself, rest, eat, sleep, read the scriptures, read books, and enjoy your life as much as you can. But do you need to write yourself a love letter? I mean, I don't think you need to do that. That doesn't need to be part of your self-care. You could write somebody else a love letter. And I think the self-care is sort of like living under the law without the grace of the gospel. The work of doing self-care is going to become increasingly burdensome. You're never going to be able to achieve the goals that you set for yourself because they're not tethered to the grace and peace of God who picks up the pieces when you fail. So I think it's you really got to be careful how you think about it and what you let into your emotional landscape about how it is that you care for yourself. I think this bears a lot more careful thinking for Christians, especially people who maybe come into the church from the world with a lot of these assumptions coming in unquestioned.
I think that's something that is good to think about. Like, so what does self-care look like for the Christian, especially some people who are newer to the Christian faith? I mean, they've kind of breathed the waters of, you know, self-forgiveness and maybe even self-prayer, or they've invested a lot of money in shea butter and et cetera. So if someone's newer to the faith or just a little bit confused, what is a biblical view of self-care for a Christian?
Well, I think it would need to, first of all, be oriented. You know, the first thing, if you were really going to care for yourself, is you would need to orient your own identity in God. So the best thing to do for yourself is to meditate on who God is and what he's done and how it is that he cares for you, and to immediately put yourself into his hands in a trusting way and let him care for you, which will mean that you will end up doing hard things for yourself. You know, like, as God cares for you, he will draw you to care for your own body, and then to care for other people in ways that are not the mani-pedi kind of way. You know, you're gonna discipline. Paul talks about beating his body and making it his slave in order to come closer to Christ. So your body belongs to God. It's a temple, as you said. You don't get to do whatever you want with who you are. You have to give yourself to Jesus, and then he will organize your life for you. So you don't end up with a long list of stuff that you need to do to be balanced. I think Christians should expect in their self-care to be frustrated a lot, to have a deep sense of longing that is never quite satisfied in this life, to live with a certain level of unhappiness and dissatisfaction, and to become comfortable with those things, because they point you towards the deep wellness or wholeness that comes at the eschaton. We don't get to have those things yet. So your self-care should be really about getting to know Christ and then getting to know other people and pointing yourself towards them, becoming oriented towards their good, at the expense of your own, often in painful, you know, sacrificial ways. And being, as the word I like most is self-forgetful. The best way to practice self-care is to become as self-forgetful as possible, because that, you know, lessens the burden of the ego and makes you more like Christ, who was perfect. So he was perfectly balanced. He had everything. He did the whole human thing perfectly. So if you want to be like Jesus, which I think you should want to do, you would become self-forgetful. You would count other people as more important than you. And that's, you know, self-care for the Christian is really about self-forgetfulness, taking care of the necessities of life and the joys of life, enjoying your life, but not thinking about yourself so much.
You know, in the New Testament, in 1 Corinthians, Paul talks about having unity in the body, and that is in the church among Christians, that, you know, nobody's honored more than others. And it just talks about members of the body caring for one another. So if somebody's suffering, we suffer with them. Or if somebody has joys, we rejoice with that person. And to me, that's the opposite of self-care as it's defined by the world, because it's not focusing literally on yourself. And so what about caring for others? What about caring for others in the body of Christ? And, you know, there's so much imagery in the Bible of how God cares for us, especially in a tender way, like a shepherd. That imagery is used over and over in the Old and New Testament. So what should it look like for the Christian to care for other people?
I think this is the necessary outflow of your being cared for by Christ, and knowing Christ, is that you will turn out and care for other people in difficult ways. And I think it is really interesting for me to watch my own congregation, place where I go to church, as people have tried to care for each other in COVID, in the isolation, keeping track of each other, not making sure that people are, you know, the members of our local congregation are not isolated from each other, at least maybe in certain physical sense, but not emotionally, that we're emotionally connected to each other. We pray together. We meet over Zoom. We meet in the park as much as we can. We go to church in safe ways. We are kind. You know, I think a lot of the self-care language, it speaks a language of kindness. You know, that you need to be gentle with yourself. You need to be kind to yourself. You need to forgive yourself. You need to not worry. But all of it turns out, it ultimately becomes a way of commanding yourself to, holding yourself to a standard that even you can't reach. You don't want to do that with yourself. You don't want to hold yourself to a standard that you can't reach. And you don't want to hold other people to that standard either. Charity, that lost word, I think is the ground of care. And so you have to be charitable. You have to give love, give material help, give spiritual help. You have to pray for each other. And so much so that you're enmeshed together. And if one person is actually suffering, everybody else feels it. I mean, that's true in a spiritual sense. But I've been in congregations where people were so disconnected from each other. If somebody had, you know, a cancer diagnosis or something, nobody even knew. Whereas that's not how it should be. You should know, you should feel the pain of the other people to one degree or another. Help them bear it. My favorite image of this, it's outside of the Bible, but in Lewis's Till We Have Faces, I really love the relationship between Orul and Psyche and how the pain that they're each enduring is sort of parallel, but it's for each other. Or in both cases, their salvation is bound up together as they wait to see Cupid. And I love that. I think that should be how. It's messy. It's difficult. You can't, it's not in an orderly line. You don't just go from point A to point B, and you're not happy a lot of the time. But you can be deeply connected to each other as you walk towards Christ. You can help each other along, sort of one person carrying another person and then maybe switching as you go towards Christ. So yeah, it's care is the foundation of God's work in our lives and are reaching out towards each other.
I think a lot of times people are thinking, well, what can I do in COVID to connect with other people at my church? I think it's really important. That's another discussion if you don't go to church, if you're Christian, but to be connected into the body. I mean, there's ways you can care for yourself and care for others. I mean, go to, you know, call someone up or text them and meet a friend outside with your masks on and go for a walk together. You're caring for your own body, but you can use that time to catch up on a friend with how a friend is doing in your church, asking them, spending some time with them outside and praying together. So there's ways that you can, you know, care for yourself that involve other people. And that does take more effort on your part. You have to think of somebody that, you know, has the margin or can go for a walk even outside with you and those kinds of things, or even doing something like writing a handwritten note and mailing it to someone you know needs encouragement in your church. I mean, these days we open up the mailbox and we just see basically junk mail or coupons or something. And hardly anyone writes a handwritten letter or note anymore. So there's a lot of ways in which we can, you know, think about other people in very practical ways, even in COVID. That didn't involve you going to see them in person at all. You just, you know, put a stamp on a letter and wrote something out to someone and put it in your own mailbox. You just went to the end of your driveway. So I think there's ways that we can do it. I also think, though, that sometimes Christians feel anxiety that God isn't fully present in their suffering. And they are afraid that God won't care for them, whether they face something big like, you know, a death in their family, or maybe a rebellious child, or maybe a divorce or something, financial hardship, that they're worried that God won't care for them or won't notice their situation. So how does God care for us? How do Christians feel comfort and encouragement through the care that God has for them?
I was on a sort of a tear about that earlier. I mean, maybe very quietly that I guess I'm sort of tired. I hear a lot of still people say, well, this is a first world problem, and then go on and articulate something that's really, really troubling. You know, okay, first world problems are not being able to get the brand of ice cream that you want at a store. But I guess first world problems are also not being able to get toilet paper because, you know, COVID hit the world. And that I just, the posture of the Christian should be one of just complete and total trust in God who cares for you. And so you should go to him with every single thing that you need, whether it's big or small, whether it's you would think legitimate or illegitimate, you know, whether it's fair or not fair. If you are experiencing any kind of lack at all, you should go to God with that, and he will meet your need, whatever the need really is. I don't think that we don't, you know, one of the central images of scripture is that we don't think that God is going to give us what we want or what we need. And we conflate want and need with each other. And so we don't ask, we just go ahead and take it. And I think there's an element about self-care to me that feels very much like Eve reaching for the apple. She just, you know, she thought she needed the apple, and so she went ahead and took it. That's sort of the primordial picture of self-care is the fall in the garden. And so if you want God to care for you, what you're doing is saying, I'm not going to take that thing right now. I'm not going to go buy whatever that is the minute I need it. I'm going to first pray. I'm going to ask God to take care of me. Then maybe I will go buy whatever it is if I have the money. If I don't, I'll ask God. Maybe he'll give it to me another way. But he's going to minister. He's going to take care of me. He's going to feed my body and my soul if I trust him in real terms. And that means not minimizing the things that you find troubling, but actually asking for help. I have heard, and you know, over the years, Christians say, "Well, I don't want to pray for myself because it's selfish." Well, no, it's self-care. You know, what's selfish is going out and just enacting your own happiness at the expense of, you know, your own expense and the expense of everybody else. Rather, if you really want to be taken care of, you go to God, who has the power and the will to take care of you because he loves you. So Christians do not need to think of care in terms of the self, because God is the one who made you. He takes care of you, and he knows you, and he knows what you need. So, you know, it's an act of trust. It's horrible. I mean, I've been trying to trust God all week, and I say from personal experience that it's not fun. And God isn't coming through for me in the way that I planned for him to. So that's a grave disappointment to me, but I think ultimately it will be all right. All things will be well in the end. You just have to wait for him.
And I think it goes back to, as people, as Christians, what were we created for? We were created to be in a relationship with God. And so self-care really it's more about how are we becoming more like Christ. That should be our primary thought. And so some of the things that the Lord thinks in his care for us that is best for us, we might not enjoy, but that is helping us become what he's called us to be. And I think in this age of, I could, you know, if I had the money, buy a, you know, lotion for $55, which I'd be interested to read the ingredients. Is it different than lotion that you can get from Walmart?
I know.
For, you know, $5? I don't know. It just has a different bottle and label, and it's still cocoa butter. But, you know, just to think about really what, if you're in a relationship with God, what is that supposed to be about? Is it about the care for yourself and the things that you need, that you think you need for your highest good? Or are you really desiring to know him more and be more like Christ? So those are two different things, I think, than what we think of in terms of what the world thinks of in terms of self-care. Well, finally, on a much lighter note, what is your favorite Thanksgiving dinner side dish?
Ooh, I think right now it's probably parsnips.
Oh, that is very unusual. I'm sure someone will have to Google what are parsnips. Okay. And well, speaking of COVID, because we have talked about it a little bit in this podcast, you know, there's a lot of different rules in different states. So what are your particular family's plans during COVID? Have they changed because there's new, you know, regulations about how meeting and so forth where you live?
We're kind of, there are 8 of us in our family, and then my parents live right here. So we're at the 10 mark, which is what our governor has said. But our county has said they're not going to enforce, they're not going to come door to door and make sure that you only have 10 people in your house for Thanksgiving. But we're going to probably try to make sure that people who are alone in our church are scooped up one way or another in all the very various households in the church. So I don't know if that means we'll have, because people are not going to be able to travel. So we're going to see what we can do here as a church community to make sure that people are not actually completely alone for Thanksgiving and Christmas. Unfortunately, I have a huge house, so I feel like people can be safe in my house in masks or not in masks, socially distanced, and still be together a little bit. So we'll see how it plays out. But, I was interested in the, I guess in Oregon, they said that you can only have 6 people in your house. Well, I have 8 people in my family. So I'm just wondering how people are living in the states where they're saying you can only have this many people in your house. I mean, do you have to put some kids to the curb? I was trying to tell my kids yesterday, I was like, 2 of you have got to leave. They didn't think it was funny.
I know my pastor and his wife have 9 kids. She just had a baby, and I'm just thinking that's 11. So they're definitely over the 10 limit. And I think like her parents come in town, they'll be way too many.
Yeah.
So I know I mentioned at the beginning when I introduced you in your bio that you have a new revised version of your book out. So can you explain the title of your book? Because I mention it every time, and maybe some people are wondering, what does she mean in that title? Because it's not a very cheery title.
Yes, it's actually been altered slightly. The original was 365 Sarcastic Devotions for Angry and Worn Out People. And somewhere along the way, the word sarcastic got taken out. I can't remember why. Well, I've been telling people it's because the book itself is more, I took all the sarcasm and put it inside the book. But it's a sort of an anti-devotional. If you're tired of being told what to do, read this verse, pray this prayer, be a better person, get through it in 365 days. I've never enjoyed those kinds of devotionals. So I wrote one, sort of a demotivation, working through the whole Bible in a year. There's a reading plan along the bottom, and going to all of the parts of the Bible that I find are particularly difficult and are not usually devotional material. Like, for example, the Levite's concubine.
And Judges.
Yeah, and Judges. That's one of them. And a lot of texts like that. I try to tackle it, and in short, I think none of them are over 250 words, I think, and get you through the whole Bible so that you won't give up on the Bible or on God, hopefully, and that you can still see how it is that God is speaking through the scriptures. Because there's so many good ways to do that, but a lot of them involve reading commentaries or even, listening to a long sermon, which I recommend doing both, of course. But if you're just trying to make it through the Bible for the first time or second time, this should help you hopefully keep going and not give up on that, so that you can see the whole plan of God's work in the world through the scriptures. So, yeah, it's for people. And I feel like it's a good time because, I don't know, I'm still angry and I'm still worn out, even after the last go around. So if you're not, happy clappy, if you're discouraged, this is a good book for you.
Well, actually the title of the second edition is Nailed at 365 Readings for Angry or Worn Out People. So I guess you could be either or both, angry and worn out or worn out. But anyway, I just wanted to ask you about that because I'm sure people are wondering about it as well. Well, thanks for being on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.
from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Ann Kennedy. She has written a feature article called There Is No Health in Us, Wellness and Self-Care in the Age of COVID-19. And you'll find that article in Volume 43, Number 2, issue of the print edition, which you can read when you subscribe for $33.50 to our magazine at equip.org.
We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraph, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.